Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, America's most popular self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. During this show, you'll find out why I say homophobic. There is a Colorado fireman. I'm not going to give you his name during this show, nor will I give you the name of the Roman Catholic priest that befriended him when he was a teenager. But there's a Colorado fireman whose father died when he was young. He was 14 years old. They lived in the mountains in Colorado. And I won't even give you the name of the town. And the local Catholic priest befriended the teenage boy. And the family was so thankful because this young boy's dad had just died suddenly of a heart attack. And how devastating that must be to a young teenager. And the family members, they had attended this priest's church. And so everything seemed to be going well, but the young boy became an alcoholic. And I have here a letter that the boy wrote once he became a man, in fact, 24 years later. And I'm going to read you the letter by this Colorado fireman to this Roman Catholic priest. And I want to ask the fireman's cousin, who's here in the studio with us, Donna, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome here at Bob Enyart Live. Donna, you provided us this letter. It's just absolutely devastating. What your cousin, he wrote this letter when? Point of it in his life?
I believe that this letter was written towards the end of his life when going through rehabilitation for his alcoholism. Mm-hmm. I think this letter was a way for him to resolve the anger and the bitter that he has felt over those 24 years, to kind of let go of that.
Okay. And the reason you think it was written right before the end of his life, because it's not dated, the letter.
Right.
But it starts out, it has been 24 years since, and it's a letter written to this priest.
Correct.
And he died, he must have died then, he was 14 years old, mm-hmm, when his dad died, and 24 years later, so 42 years of age or so, that's about, I'm sorry, 38 years of age, that's about when he would have died.
Exactly.
Okay. So he wrote this letter apparently right before he died. How did he die?
He put a gun to his mouth and shot himself.
Oh, what a tragedy.
Very much.
And, you know, after September 11th and all the firemen who died, we tend to have extra appreciation and respect for firemen all over the country, not just in New York City. And so here was a guy who went into a profession that we admire. He must have had a hard time in his teenage years because his dad died.
Right.
And here's a priest. Now, Donna, during this, if we could try to avoid for now using his name, your cousin's name, or the priest's name, and if you slip and you call your cousin by his first name or the priest by his name, that's okay, but let's try not to.
Okay.
So I'll read the letter, and as I go through, perhaps you can help us understand.
All right.
And I know that you have contacted the Roman Catholic Church, and you're currently investigating the details behind this.
Correct.
Okay. And whether or not the church knew that this priest had molested other boys.
Right.
Okay. So he writes, "Dear," and then the priest's name. It's a handwritten note, about a page and a third. "Dear so-and-so, it's been 24 years since you sexually molested me." That's quite a way to start a letter. And by the way, this priest, is he still, do you know of his whereabouts, this priest?
I do. He is no longer a priest.
Oh, he's not?
He is a former priest.
Okay.
And is married.
He is now married.
He has left the church he married, and he lives in the Denver area.
Oh, he does?
Yes, he does.
Okay. So maybe we could try to contact him. Okay, dear so-and-so priest. It's been 24 years since you sexually molested me. I also have been an alcoholic for 24 years. I don't know if there is a correlation, but I think so. That's pretty reasonable.
Yeah, I would definitely
assume
that is a connection.
Right, and he's not, you know, he's admitting that maybe not, but it seems to him that it very well may be. I was young and vulnerable when this happened. My father had just died, and you were unhappy as a priest. Huh. Mm-hmm. So this priest must have told your cousin
that he was unhappy.
That he didn't like being a priest, or that he was unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
Did anyone else in your family know that about the priest?
No, absolutely not. I didn't know about this until many years later.
Mm-hmm. And you're still young, but you were even younger back then. You were how old?
Oh, when this occurred?
Well, yeah, about.
I was probably around teenager? 12 years old.
Okay. You were fun to be around, hunting, flying, building computers, and traveling. But you always scared me by talking so much about sex and sin. You know, I've recorded an interview with a guy from Indianapolis recently, and he told me about a priest there who tried to molest him when he was a teenager, and that was the same thing that priest did. Now, in this case, your cousin's case, the priest did molest him.
Correct.
In the other case in Indianapolis, that guy didn't allow the priest. Once the priest touched him, he ran out.
Oh, I'm so thankful for that.
Yeah, right. But on a few occasions when they got together, the only thing the priest wanted to do was talk about sex. And so you always scared me by talking so much about sex and sin. And that's what the other guy said in the recorded interview that we'll most likely be playing sometime soon. You would always ask me before serving mass at the hospital if I had, and then we're not going to read this explicitly because it's very sexually graphic, but if I had, well, committed a sexual sin, and if I needed to go to confession to confess it, the
right.
sin, that's pretty direct for a priest to ask a 14-year-old boy if he had done anything sexual that week. You played sex tapes in the car when we traveled. Now, how's that? I remember our little league coaches in Prospect Park, New Jersey, doing the same thing. Audio tapes. You know, back then, I don't even remember VCRs. I think they were brand new. But before VCRs, my little league coaches, Artie and Herbie, would bring audio tapes of sexual encounters and play them for the kids. We'll be right back. Okay, now this is a live commercial break. We're Bob and Yurt Live, and Donna, one of our listeners, is here in the studio. Donna, thanks for bringing this letter in. But right now we're doing a commercial to try to keep the show on the air. And I thought maybe you could help me.
I'd be more than happy to help you out.
Yeah?
On this.
Can you tell me, you know, I know that you have received some of our materials. You've purchased some of what have you gotten from us, and what can you tell us about it? Do you recommend any of our stuff?
Well, the first thing I would recommend is the manuscript, The Plot.
Oh.
Completely changed my life. Completely.
Whoa. When was this? When did you read it?
Well, it took me quite a while to get through it because there was so much. Not that it's hard to read. It's very easy to read
and
understand.
Well, and people have different styles. Some
right.
people only want to read. Others only want to listen. Others want to watch videos.
I was absorbing. I was a sponge, and I just had to stop at certain points and just absorb all that because it was so exciting. And I could actually understand the Bible.
Oh.
And
we're so excited when that's what people say.
Oh.
We've heard that now from a couple thousand people. We've sold a few thousand copies, and overwhelmingly people tell us that. Now I could understand the Bible.
It was so difficult before, and there were times you don't pick it up because you can't understand it. And I was told at one point, you have to leave that to people that can explain it to you. But like
you can't understand the Bible. That's for other people.
Right.
Yeah.
They'll interpret it for you and explain it to you.
Maybe whoever told you that didn't understand it. So anyway, the plot, 1-888 and Yart. Now, Donna, let's continue here.
Okay.
Because we're still in the commercial break. The first 2 minutes went over the radio stations we're on. And now this last minute of this break is just on the internet.
Okay.
So you just told us about the plot. So you encourage people to get it.
Oh, absolutely. If you want to understand the Bible and actually enjoy it, it's like when you're reading an epistle of Paul, it's like reading a letter from a relative.
Mm.
It just becomes so close to home.
Yeah.
And just so much in your heart.
That's so cool. Are you the only one in your circle that you know that's read it, or have other people?
I'm in my circle, yes, I think so, but I have purchased the plot and have given it to some of my son's friends that have been inquiring about the Bible because I want them to get the right start with it and understand it and enjoy it and read it.
All right.
And apply it to their lives. So,
all right, Hope, we're back into the show. All right, we're back. We're back into Bob and Yart Live. And I'm actually not going to give out the phone number. This is a pretty serious topic, of course. And Donna's here in studio. It's her cousin, who is the former Colorado fireman who committed suicide after a lifetime of alcoholism, which began shortly after a Roman Catholic priest here in Colorado had molested him, right after... as a teenage boy, his father had died suddenly of a heart attack. So, Donna, as we're reading the letter to the priest, the handwritten letter, written apparently just before your cousin committed suicide, he said, "You played sex tapes in the car when we traveled." And I think I probably heard the same tapes. It was, well, for me, when was I in Little League? I'm trying to think of the dates. I graduated grammar school in 1968, and so maybe around 1970, somewhere around there, that's when I remember my Little League coaches, Artie and Herbie. Not for everybody on the team, but some of the kids, they would take camping, and they would bring beer and Playboy and Penthouse magazines and audio tapes, and they'd play them, and they'd be sex, like porn videos, but the soundtrack. And so I get that's obviously the same tapes that the priest was playing for your cousin.
Incredible. And I do know that there were times there was alcohol, as you'll see later in the letter. There, you know, again, yeah, there's alcohol in pornography and tapes.
Yeah, and I don't know if the coaches that did this when I was in Little League, they were our coaches from when we had Pee Wee and then Little League. And they were our coaches in Pee Wee. And then I graduated to Little League. That's what we called it back then. I was on the Pirates. The Reds first, then the Pirates. And I don't know if those guys were homosexuals or not. I don't know that. I didn't have any evidence of that, thankfully. But I can see what a homosexual do. He'll use regular pornography, heterosexual pornography, to get a boy interested, and then he'll try to switch him to a homosexual act. So I guess that was the strategy the priest was using. So you played sex tapes in the car when we traveled. I should have guessed something was up. I remember sleeping with you on a trip to Canada and waking up with you, and that's a part we'll leave out here, but a pretty despicable sexual thing to this young teenage boy. I was scared to death and afraid to move. Then, in Sterling, Colorado, apparently on another trip, you got me drunk on, I can't make this out. I could see vodka, but I can't make out that. You got me drunk on...
Looks like lime vodka.
Oh, lime. I'm sorry. Okay, lime vodka. And You had the briefcase of pornography. So once again, the same thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if this 14-year-old boy had the wisdom and the courage and knew exactly what to do, the first indication of this, he would have left, told his mother, his dad was dead.
Right.
But your dad is dead, you're depressed, here's somebody being a friend. He's sort of enticing you with things that are very interesting. A 14-year-old boy, sex is what's more interesting. And he's letting him drink and taking him on trips. And so it's extraordinarily manipulative.
Absolutely.
Right. Extraordinarily. It's a huge effort put into seducing this 14-year-old. And this, you know, all the priests all over the country now that have molested children that we know of, and especially boys, and none of it just happened. It was all, you know, typically from what I've heard over the years, it's some real effort by the priest to bring about the right circumstance where he could attempt to seduce a child. And apparently there have been thousands of priests willing to put in that effort, not only here in the U.S., but if you look at it all over the world. Wow. Donna, have you heard about, I know we've discussed it on the show, you might have heard it on this show, about the Roman Catholic Church and whether or not they will admit homosexuals into their seminaries? Do you know about that topic?
Just from what I've probably heard on your show, that has become common practice now.
Right, and it started maybe 40 years ago or so, where they decided they would admit homosexuals into the seminary to become priests as long as the homosexuals said they would be celibate. And that's just despicable. Oh. I guess by that policy, you could also admit pedophiles.
Well, of course.
Right.
You just have to promise to be celibate.
Yeah, and priests who are interested in bestiality, sex with animals, as long as they say they'll be celibate. Instead of recognizing that this is a gross perversion and these people are not qualified to lead. Some people are leaders and they're qualified to lead. Other people are not leaders. They need to be led. And a pedophile, a homosexual, somebody involved in this gross sexual perversion is not qualified to lead.
Well, and what a better place to hide within the church. And
yeah, and living with a bunch of guys in a rectory, which I think is, by the way, it's time for the Roman Catholic Church to name the place where the priest lives. But anyway.
Yeah.
It's right. You don't become a priest. If you're a homosexual, you don't become a priest to get away from your homosexuality.
No. It's a good disguise.
Quite the opposite.
Yeah.
Because you live with a bunch of guys who supposedly are not having sex. You know that in the seminary they're attracting homosexuals. And you also know that you're going to be working around altar boys. And what's with that anyway?
Confession.
Yeah, right. You get to hear people's sexual perversions. And if there's anybody in the church who's a homo, you stand a good chance of finding out. Yeah, the whole thing is sick.
Mm-hmm.
And even just the concept of altar boys.
Yeah.
I mean, forget that too. It's just too much. All right. So let's go back to this. So you got me drunk on lime vodka and had the briefcase full of pornography. Do you remember, and then I'm not going to couldn't possibly describe this next part. It's so unbelievably despicable. Describing in details the sexual perversion that this priest did to this 14-year-old boy. How long did the priest and your cousin, how long were they together with this happening?
I'm just going by my memory of this, trying to put this back together, but I can recall, I'm believing it was through the summer months right after his father died. I didn't even really realize anything except that I realized this priest wasn't coming around anymore like he used to.
Oh, so he had been a friend of the family, then all of a sudden it ended.
Right.
Okay. But you didn't put anything together.
No.
He just disappeared. And
right.
And it wasn't until when did you first become aware?
When my cousin committed suicide was the first I had heard rumors of this. Yeah, this was the reason why.
And then with this current, with the scandals and the headlines, you went into the papers after your cousin's death, and you went looked, and you pulled out this letter, and
right.
that's when you brought it to us
right.
here at Bob and Yart Live. Okay. Anyone else in your family interested in pursuing this with the Roman Catholic Church to find out the work history of this priest?
Right. I have talked to the brother of my cousin, which is my cousin.
Right. So the Colorado fireman who committed suicide, you talked to his brother.
Correct. He has a younger brother, mm-hmm. and he has given me his blessing to pursue this because time constraints with his job, he cannot.
Mm-hmm.
And he would like to know. He had actually a meeting after my cousin died with this priest here in Denver. The priest was going to give full disclosure to him, and of course he didn't show up.
Oh, so, well, okay, now let me understand that. Apparently your cousin, the brother, had called this priest and said, I want to meet with you. I want to know what happened.
To which he did
and the
admit.
Priest admitted on the phone.
Correct.
That's what your cousin told you.
Correct.
And then they were going to get together to
right.
talk face to face.
Right.
And the priest
he never
then
showed up.
Didn't show up to the
right.
meeting. All right. So. Well, we, you know, and so you know, you said you know that the priest lives, he's married.
Yes.
He lives here in Denver. Mm-hmm. And you think we could get his address or phone number?
We can check the phone book. I'm
all
sure
right.
it's probably in there.
All right. And if it's not in the phone book, you think you know where he lives?
I have a pretty good idea. I have seen him since down in this area.
Okay. All right. Okay. And so perhaps it's something we'll pursue also here at Bob and Yart Live. And you know, we're only on in a few cities around the country over Information Radio Network. Our flagship station is here in Denver, KLT. But when people molest kids, they shouldn't be able to get away with it.
He's still out there.
Right. And apparently he's never had to confront this publicly.
Right.
And also the Roman Catholic Church may have a responsibility here. We don't know yet, right?
Right.
If they had no knowledge of this, then it seems they wouldn't be responsible. But if they did have knowledge that this priest had molested children previously, and they just moved him to sort of quiet it down, then obviously the church does have responsibility.
I would think so.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to find out.
Yeah. What? So you are. So you, in the near future, you'll be meeting with one of the officials of the church
of the archdiocese. Yes.
And you'll let us know how that goes.
I will.
Okay. All right. Now let's get back to the letter. So we just had the part that was so despicable. There's no way I could possibly even attempt to communicate it on the air. Then there was the trip to Denver when you got three of us drunk. And then, I won't describe it, but the priest came into your cousin's bed early in the morning and began sexual acts again. And three, and we don't know the third person, right?
Right.
We'll be back in a moment. Live commercial break here. This is Bob and Yart Live. And Donna, thanks for joining me in the studio.
You're welcome.
And right now, on our radio affiliates, they're doing the news. But here on the web, for people listening via KGov, and there are people even in other countries in Europe and New Zealand, Canada, and even in Mexico tuning in, maybe you could help me tell people about some of our materials.
All right.
So what is there something you've... Something else, you mentioned the plot.
Right.
What else would you, is there anything else you'd recommend?
Well, I would recommend a lot of your videos that you have. I know that my husband And my children, their favorite is Get Out of the Matrix.
Oh, really?
They just loved that one.
It's fun.
Well, and it's also made us as a family decide if my daughter's going to go to college or not.
Oh, yeah, because I get to debate a whole class, a philosophy class, about just truth. Does truth exist, right and wrong? And how would you characterize the students in the video, these college students? How do you describe them?
Well, my husband, I haven't got to actually view that one yet, but I do know that that's my family's favorite. They watch it all the time.
Okay.
All
right. Well, didn't know that. But the funny thing is that these kids, they couldn't complete a sentence. They couldn't put a thought together. They couldn't respond to the simplest questions. It was just startling to see.
It.
Wow.
Strange.
So anyway, that's your families.
My family.
Who and your husband?
My husband and my children.
And your
two sons and a daughter.
Enjoy that video.
They love it.
Get Out of the Matrix. It really is a funny one. All right. Anything else?
My favorite, which I have watched several times, is Mount Moriah. Oh. And I just get so excited every time I see it, and then sometimes I cry over it because it's just so exciting.
The evidence of the resurrection. Because the Apostle Paul says, if Jesus did not rise from the dead, then we're fools.
Right.
We shouldn't be Christians if he didn't rise from the dead. But if he did, then, everybody should be a Christian. And so what is the evidence? And that video goes through the evidence for the resurrection.
It does. And just to see some of the pictures that you have of where the burial tomb was. Mm. That's where I start crying at that point when I realize.
It's pretty awesome. You know, if we go to Israel again, you guys should come with us.
I'd love to.
Because we go to the Garden Tomb. All right. And so 1-888-836-9278. All right, so Donna, thank you for joining us here. I'm Bob and Yurt Live. And I pastor a church, Denver Bible Church. In fact, your family comes to our church.
I do know that. Yes, I do.
Yeah. And when did you guys start coming? Just recently?
We just recently started coming. We had family circumstances that kind of kept us at home with a sick relative. And then when I found that you had the church, it was so exciting.
Yeah, how long ago? Not long ago at all.
Matter of fact, a couple months ago.
Yeah. So it's so neat to have your family at Denver Bible Church. When you have a church, you know that there's a great responsibility, and there's families, there's children, and so the people that teach the kids, even the nursery, you know, there's such an awareness that you're entrusted with the welfare of other people. And that the Roman Catholic Church has the scandal, and some people see the church as the victim. But that's simply wrong, because the church did this to the victims. First, they admitted homosexuals to their seminaries. Then when the priest, apparently in huge numbers, epidemic, when the priests were sexually molesting kids, the church, as a matter of policy, just moved them from one parish to another.
That's right. They are hiding them. They're hiding their crimes.
Right. For decades. And eventually, you know, the Bible says your sin will find you out. And that's true of bishops as well as unbelievers.
Right.
And not to mention the bishops who are also unbelievers. Just like the Protestant ministers who are not really Christians.
Right.
Or the rabbis who are atheists. You know, it's a real shame that people go into religion as a profession, like you'd be a plumber. And they don't have a love for God. They just go into it for whatever benefits they get out of it. This priest, how old was the priest?
He was young when he came to our town. Mm-hmm. He seemed young to me because we had always had older priests as I grew up. And so he seemed very young to me.
So he may have been one of the first generation of homosexuals admitted into the seminaries.
Right.
And then unleashed on unsuspecting families out in the diocese.
Right.
This wasn't a huge city, right?
No, very small town.
Very small. And was he one of a few priests?
There were two Catholic churches in our town, but I would say the church that he was the priest of was the largest of the Catholic.
Of the two. And was there a few priests at that church?
No, just one.
So it was just him?
Correct.
Now, that's interesting. If he was young and fresh out of seminary, I would think they wouldn't put him in charge of a church right out of seminary.
Yeah.
You'd think they'd put him where he'd be in training with some other established priest. And I'm only doing a little intuiting here. I don't know, but I'm just guessing. What I surmise was he started at another church.
Oh, I agree.
And
yeah.
So then they moved him. And if that was a small town out in the middle of Nowhereville, Colorado, I don't mean to demean the town you grew up in, but it's sort of like sending somebody to Siberia or the Russian front or to Omaha or something. Well, not Omaha, but like out in the middle of nowhere. And so, you know, so superficially, that could fit the profile of the Catholic Church moving people from a big church to a small church, like getting them out of the way, sending them off somewhere. So, but that's what your family wants to find out, right?
That's right.
Were there accusations against this priest, and then therefore were they negligent?
Right.
Right.
I'm definitely going to try to find out
what
the
his work
history.
Where he went to seminary, and where he had been a priest previously.
Right.
And they, I would think, you can't force them to tell you that information, at least not just by asking, but the information might be damning to them.
I'm afraid it probably will be.
It may be, right? Yeah. That's your gut feel. Because somebody, this priest sounds like he was a full-blown child molester at this point. Doesn't seem like this was his first effort.
No.
He was proficient at it.
He
knew exactly what to
plan,
do.
A plan, a strategy, for sure.
Right. Mm-hmm. And he spotted a vulnerable 14-year-old boy, and it's almost like that's what he was waiting for.
Right.
You know, he was there in order to find kids to have sex with. That was the purpose for his existence.
I believe so.
As far as I can tell. And so it doesn't seem like this would have been his first sin in this regard, his first crime committed. So if the church does, if they did have in his records, if they do have other accusations against him and they give that to you, that's like giving you the ammunition that you can use to, you know, to take action against them.
Right.
Now, I don't know about, you know, because it was so long ago, I don't know how that'll play in. But it seems to me that they would be fools not to tell you everything they know about this priest.
I would hope that they would, you know, give me the information that
they
I
will
like.
Be forthcoming,
right.
Even if it makes the church look bad.
Right. I mean, it couldn't be any worse than it is now.
Mm-hmm. And it was a few decades ago, and probably the people who were making the decisions are, you know, no longer in those positions, or maybe some of them are dead already.
Right. Yeah.
But, so we will want to know here on the show, we'll want to know if they are forthcoming and if they give you information readily.
Okay.
So you'll let us know?
I will.
Thank you. Let's go on with the letter. Okay, so after the trip to Denver where the priest got three of them drunk, we don't know who the third person was.
I'm assuming there were two other young boys, but I do not know for sure who they were.
Right. You have a guess? Or no?
I have a guess who one of them may have
but
been.
You don't want to say, I imagine.
Right, because right. I'm just assuming.
Yeah, right, okay. Okay, and then I can never go with you again after that. And so obviously, he adds, because I couldn't trust you. Well, obviously.
Right. Obviously.
And, you know, it would have been great if he would have realized that earlier, but he was vulnerable. Okay, what happened to me was... To continue with the letter, what happened to me was feeling the tremendous guilt that I would go to hell.
Yeah.
Imagine that. This is a 14-year-old kid. His dad just died. And the priest, his supposed spiritual guide, is done this despicable thing to him. And now he's feeling this guilt like he would go to hell.
Like he was responsible for this whole...
Right. And, you know, even a teenager is responsible for their actions. But, you know, an adult in a position of authority, that's why we have such a taboo against teachers having sex or relationship with students and lawyers. Well, we have a taboo against lawyers in any respect. But, you know, even doctors or counselors or pastors entering into a relationship with people that are coming to them for help because they're so vulnerable. They can be so manipulated so easily.
Well, and I think it led to a lot of confusion, too, on the part of my cousin. He obviously didn't know how to handle this situation. He was confused with his mm-hmm. authority and his power.
Right. And so now God is going to send me to hell.
Right.
And so the priest, how many people have been turned off from God because of what, not only priests, but even ministers, Protestant ministers that have had an affair with the women in their church. Women come to them devastated that their own marriages are failing. I've heard from people in the pastor of the church ends up having an affair with the choir leader. Whatever. What a shame. Okay. This was something I never talked to anyone about until I was 28. So he let 14 years go by. He never told anyone.
Right.
And then 10 years later is when he committed suicide. I could never get close to another man in my life. And that's devastating.
That was tragic.
I could never get close to another man in my life. I hate homosexuals, and I hate it myself.
I think he was worried that now he was a homosexual and became very promiscuous through his high school years.
Well, most of the homosexuals I've talked to in private conversations have told me in the course of the conversation that their first sexual encounter was when they were young with an older, either an old teenager or a man. Most of them. And that's why we say here on Bob and Yurt Live that homosexuals do reproduce sexually. They reproduce sexually by molesting children.
That's right.
It is a sexual reproduction for homosexual men. I can never get close to another man in my life. I hate homosexuals and I hate it myself. You represented religion, and religion was tied to my faith in God, and I lost both.
Right.
Isn't that something? And that he was able to distinguish between just religion and faith in God, but he lost both. We'll be right back with Donna. We're in a live commercial break now, and Donna has come to the studio here at KGov. And KGov is our internet website, and our flagship radio station is KLT in Denver, Colorado. And the program is carried by Information Radio Network around the country in just a few cities. But Donna, thanks for coming into the studio.
You're welcome.
And since you're here, we do live commercial breaks. I thought you can help out. So are any other materials we've got here at Bob and Yurt Live that you could recommend to people in the audience?
Well, let's see. We've covered the plot in some of the videos. And right now what I'm doing is purchasing one of your audio study Bible albums at a time and going through that book and learning more about each of the books of the Bible. And it just really helps me get through it and understand it.
Any specifics? We've got about 20 of those albums, books of the Bible.
And I have to admit that I get so excited, I jump back and forth from the New Testament to the Old Testament to all over, because I'll just see one of your albums. Probably, you know, just starting with Genesis, the creation, and the six tapes there. And
that
and
was so much fun, Genesis creation.
It led me to a lot of other studies in other areas because of the science of it. And
the science involved in the whole issue of evolution versus creation.
Right.
And how rational and scientific, logical creation is, and how unscientific evolution is.
It's really given me a whole new love for science in the Bible.
Wow.
And so I would definitely recommend, you know, reviewing one of the albums of the different books of the Bible and then going through it that way. Mm-hmm. Since I can't be at the Bible study in person, it's just as good to have it at home.
And to be clear for people who are thinking about ordering, we've got two different things that overlap. We have our monthly Bible study tapes. That it's really the number one source of our support to keep Bob and Yart live on the air. People sign up and they receive for $24.95 a month, we charge to their credit card automatically. Once a month, we mail out four tapes to them. And as they get those mailings, we start with an overview of the whole Bible, the plot, and then the tree, where all the trouble started. And then we go through the books of the Bible and different topics. But people can also order the same material album by album if they want.
Right.
So once a month they could get an audio album.
Get it.
So you can go either way. The number 1-888 and Yart. In studio, Donna, whose cousin, a Colorado fireman, committed suicide years after he had been molested by a Roman Catholic priest who had befriended him just after his father died. So your cousin died at age 14. I'm sorry. Your cousin's father died at age 14. Your cousin's father died when your cousin was 14 years of age. This Roman Catholic priest befriended him, started molesting him. Your cousin became an alcoholic, lived for 24 years as an alcoholic, then wrote this letter to the priest, dear priest, and then committed suicide.
Right.
Okay. And so now we're reading the letter that your cousin wrote to the priest, and we're near the end of the letter, handwritten letter. And let's continue with it. He had just said that he even hated himself, and you represented religion, and religion was tied to my faith in God, and I lost both since the priest had sexually molested him. And that's the greater obligation that ministers have. If you're representing God to people and you hurt them, your victims might blame God, even though they shouldn't. They might.
Right, and
that's why Jesus said it'd be better if a millstone were tied around your neck and you were thrown into the sea and drowned than if you caused a little one to stumble.
That's right.
Right. And this, as far as I know, this priest, he's still in Denver. He doesn't have a millstone tied around his neck.
Not yet.
He wasn't thrown into the ocean anywhere. Okay. I know, writing to the priest, I know that you even asked my mom out on dates.
That was a surprise to me.
Wow.
When I read the letter.
But she rejected your request as she knew it was your act, as she knew your actions were immoral. Wow. And it would have been great for her to report him to the church.
Absolutely. This is a part of this whole thing that I'm trying to figure out as well, is that the younger brother, Scott, also went on a trip with this priest to Sterling. Mm-hmm. Nothing happened, but yeah, you know, he was telling me about opening drawers full of little bottles of liquor, and he was like surprised, like, why would a priest have this in there? He had a camper with a trailer.
Oh.
Yeah.
Rather convenient.
Right.
Yeah. All right, so the priest also hit on the boy's mom. And, you know, homosexuals very often go both ways. Most homosexuals, you know, are bisexual, most. Okay, when I was 22, I saw you at an airport going to a fire. So he, as a Colorado fireman, he was on his way to fly somewhere to help fight a fire.
Right.
And that's the kind of person we think of as a hero. I wanted to kill you. Now, a question for you, Donna.
Mm-hmm.
Your cousins, that thought in him for vengeance, does that come from the devil or does that come from God? That thought for vengeance.
Comes from God.
You think so? I think you're right.
Yeah,
because God is a God of vengeance. And vengeance is not bad. God's not bad. Vengeance is good, and the guilty should be punished. Just like we cheer at the end of a Mel Gibson movie, when the bad guys get it, that's a preview of Judgment Day.
Right.
The Bible says the righteous will rejoice when we see the vengeance. God says to us, don't exact vengeance yourself because it could so easily get out of hand. But restrain yourself, and God authorizes the government to exact vengeance, and he will on Judgment Day. And so it was right, that feeling of desiring retribution. Okay, I wanted to kill you when I saw you at the airport. I have had many emotional hang-ups over your perverted actions. I have isolated myself in life and only wanted to be around women. You know, that's true of a lot of homosexuals.
Hmm.
Now, we don't know and are not saying that he is, but you thought that maybe he was afraid he was.
I think he thought if something like that happened, you were then.
So many, you know, countless men have said that they thought they deserved it some way, that obviously he must have been a homosexual, otherwise he wouldn't have allowed it to happen.
Right.
Right, and so he avoided, what did he write here? I never allowed myself to get close to another man in my life. And so he could have been afraid. He didn't even trust himself.
That's right.
And he was suspicious of other men. Okay, I only wanted to be around women. I would not make or associate with male friends. This was just damnable, what this priest did to your cousin. I don't feel you are responsible for my alcoholism, but you are a cause of a lot of my loneliness. So he's taking personal responsibility.
I think that this letter had to do with some kind of therapeutic mission to get over some of the 24 years that he had suffered through all this.
And you know, so much the counseling he had, I imagine it was secular counseling. Do you know?
I believe so, in Colorado Springs.
Because so much of it is an utter failure.
Right.
You know, I've gone to AA meetings. Hi, I'm Bob and I'm an alcoholic. I haven't gone because I was an alcoholic. I just went as an observer.
That's good.
You know, nothing else to do. And people in the class that are alcoholics, they're also alcoholic counselors. You know, they're a counselor, but, well, I sort of had a relapse. And so much of it is a complete failure. And obviously for him, it did not succeed. He committed suicide.
And I believe he had been in and out of many rehab programs.
Yeah, that's normal. Most of the rehab programs are just businesses.
Right.
And the recidivism rate, so to speak, the failure rate is astronomical. And no fireman that had that kind of track record would be kept on the job.
Right.
It's like 99% of every fire you go to, it burns down. So it's too bad that at least if he would have gotten good biblical Christian counseling, he would have had a real chance.
Oh.
I don't feel you are responsible for my alcoholism. And for anybody listening who remembers the first paragraph of the letter, he's not contradicting himself. He said in the beginning of the letter, first, it's been 24 years since you sexually molested me. I also have been an alcoholic for 24 years. I don't know if there is a correlation, but I think so. And so he was saying a correlation. Now here he says, I don't feel you are responsible. In other words, he's saying, I'm responsible, but I think there's a correlation. I think what you did then, I was vulnerable, and it prompted me to take this cop-out approach. But you are a cause of a lot of my loneliness. I can't forgive you as you were sick and had a problem. I also have to forgive myself as I have carried a lot of hate and anger. So now he probably was taught in his psychobabble counseling that you have to forgive everyone.
I agree.
And so much of that, it's just psychobabble. Mm-hmm. And Christian teachers and even pastors today who teach their flock, you have to forgive everyone. Well, where does the Bible say you have to forgive everyone? Jesus said, if your brother sins against you, do you remember how to finish that verse? Jesus said, if your brother sins against you, do you remember what comes next?
Forgive him if he repents.
Ah, very good, if he repents. And there's actually something before that. Jesus said, if your brother sins against you, rebuke him. And if he repents, forgive him.
Right.
Not forgive him automatically, rebuke him. Even in the Old Testament, when God is speaking, it says, love your neighbor, rebuke him. Rebuke your neighbor so that you're not responsible for his sin. If you know somebody's doing wrong, rebuke him. And if he repents, Jesus said in Luke 17:3, if he repents, forgive him. There were people Jesus didn't forgive. There were people the Apostle Paul didn't forgive. King David didn't forgive. So what's with this forgive everyone as though repentance is unnecessary?
I just think this was his way of trying to get over the hurt, which I don't think, obviously it didn't work because it had a tragic outcome.
Right.
I don't think he'd ever did get over the hurt and the anger.
And all the people who are told forgive whoever had an affair with your wife or whatever, and they haven't repented, but just forgive them. That's not real.
No.
And that forgiveness, I don't think that's even real most of the time. They're just repressing it.
Right.
What we would have told your cousin is do not forgive him. Confront him, rebuke him, sue him, try to bring criminal charges against him, and if he repents, forgive him. But even if he repents, still try to bring criminal charges against him so that he or others won't do this again. Now, that was what he needed to hear.
Right.
He didn't need to hear that his anger against this priest was evidence of his own weakness because he was already considering himself a complete failure.
He had tried many times to drink himself to death. He got into really severe end of alcoholism. And
yeah, what a tragedy. So tragedy from beginning to end. Donna, I want to thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Do you think within a few weeks you might be able to get back to us?
I will.
And let us know. And I will also let you know what happens with the interview from Indianapolis of a teenage boy there that a priest tried repeatedly over years to molest. And then finally, when the priest for the first time touched him, that's when he went and told his parents and they called the archdiocese there. So we're following up on that also. So thank you for coming in, Donna.
Thank you.
May God bless you.
You too, Bob.
Thanks. Hey, and for those of you out there in the audience, in your own life, you might know of injustices that were done. Sometimes you can deal with it privately. Sometimes you have to rebuke somebody openly. Usually you go to them, and if they don't repent, then you make it public. And if necessary, you bring charges or a lawsuit. If necessary. So, of course, we will let you know where this goes, and we may try to contact this priest ourselves. And if so, of course, we'll let you know exactly what happens. It's devastating. Our society is so broken. Our laws are broken. Our churches are broken. Hey, this is Bob Benyart reminding you to do right and risk the consequences. Do right.